Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, March 13th. Local churches contemplate future mission trips amid coronavirus fears. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. As confirmed cases of the coronavirus continue to rise and countries take extreme measures to prevent its spread, churches in Midland must decide if staff and congregation members should carry on traveling for missionary work. Neil Rogers, Minister of Missions at Stonegate Fellowship, said they've already postponed a planned trip to Indonesia because the flights would have taken them through Southeast Asia. He said it was not an urgent trip, so they opted to go at a later date for the safety of those participating. Quote, "We're just taking it a day at a time and paying attention to if there are any concerns," he said. They have upcoming mission work scheduled in Nicaragua, Brazil, and Uganda, Rogers said. The U.S. State Department has not issued travel advisories related to the coronavirus for those countries, but Uganda recently denied entry to 22 foreign delegates, citing coronavirus concerns. Rogers says it's possible that Uganda and other countries will close their borders to missionaries and tourists. To prepare for that possibility, he said they have begun exploring how they could conduct missionary work virtually. Quote, "One of the things we're asking ourselves is, are we doing this traveling because it's the best thing or because it's what we're used to?" he said. Their mission partners have begun using online outlets like Zoom and Skype to train church members in other areas rather than travel to those places, Rogers said. First Baptist Church is still figuring out if they will reschedule any upcoming trips, said Pastor Darren Wood. He said they currently have groups in Costa Rica and Zambia. However, he emphasized that traveling to other countries might not pose a greater risk than traveling domestically. 6 cases of coronavirus have been confirmed in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as of Wednesday. Wood spoke to the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview Tuesday from Dallas. Quote, "I don't know if anywhere is really safe," he said. He said First Baptist is planning to send a team to Arlington soon, but might reconsider that trip if the coronavirus continues to spread in Texas. If they're not able to travel for mission work, Wood said it would have more of an effect on the church than the people they would be helping. Quote, "It would be disappointing, but every trip I've gone on, I've gotten the most out of it," he said. "The loss would be to us, not them. Their needs will still be met," end quote. He added that First Baptist was also focusing on what needs to be done at the local level. He said they set up hand sanitizer stations within the church and are encouraging members with the flu to stay home. Rogers said Stonegate is preparing for the possibility that Midland or the state of Texas will ban gatherings of large groups of people. Some countries and cities have banned events with more than 1,000 people, and Washington State on Wednesday banned gathering of more than 250 people. Stonegate has about 2,000 attendees at their 10:30 a.m. service on Sundays, Rogers said. He said the church live streams their services and is exploring adding a chat room feature to mimic a virtual congregation if need be. Quote, "In no way is there a sense of panic," Rogers said. "We're not scared or making decisions based on fear, but we want to make wise decisions," end quote. Wood echoed that sentiment encouraging church members and the public to not let fear be the deciding factor. Quote, "I think some of this is an overreaction, but an understandable one," he said. "Fear is a terrible compass, and if you operate in that way, you're going to be in a bind," end quote. He added, quote, "You can do all these precautions and still get run over by a bus," end quote. An employee at First Methodist said their mission trips haven't been affected by the coronavirus. Employees at Christ Church Anglican and First Presbyterian said their mission staff were currently away on trips and unable to comment. 5 employees leave Midland County Sheriff's Office following election. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. 2 employees have left the Midland County Sheriff's Office since the election for a new sheriff on March 3rd, and 3 more are set to resign or retire by the end of the month. Captain Rebecca Graham will be retiring March 31st, Sheriff Richard Gillette said Thursday. Senior investigator Margarita Strahan resigned on March 6th, and another employee turned in their resignation effective March 20th. Gillette said that employee is a patrol sergeant, but he is not able to release the name. He said the employees did not give reasons for their decisions to resign or retire. Quote, "It's kind of a typical thing after an election," Gillette said. "It's the nature of the beast," end quote. Chief Deputy Rory McKinney also retired on March 6th. McKinney ran for sheriff in the Republican primary this past election cycle and came in 2nd behind David Kreiner, constable for Precinct 1. News of the employees leaving the sheriff's office followed reports that Kreiner would be sworn in on April 1st, 9 months before Inauguration Day. Gillette told the Reporter-Telegram last week that he would be retiring on March 31st. He was appointed by county commissioners following the death of Sheriff Gary Painter in May. Last week, Gillette said he agreed to serve as sheriff until after the election and was retiring now that Kreiner is the sheriff-elect. County Attorney Russell Malm said the Commissioner's Court will be appointing Kreiner to finish the remainder of Painter's term before he begins his own term in January. It was reported last month that the Texas Rangers were investigating the Midland County Sheriff's Office for various criminal allegations, including unlawful interception of oral or electronic communications, abuse of official capacity, tampering with a governmental record, and theft, according to a heavily redacted report from the Texas Department of Public Safety. 2 additional investigations were also reported in recent weeks. One is an investigation into an allegation that an officer tampered with a computer provided to an inmate to work on his defense. The other revolves around an inmate's death by suicide in May 2019. Additionally, an administrative assistant at the sheriff's office filed a federal lawsuit alleging that McKinney recorded and listened to her phone calls without her consent. Kreiner told the Reporter-Telegram on March 6 that there are no current employees under investigation by the Rangers. He said he met with the Rangers in anticipation of taking office. Quote, "My concern was, if I need to put someone on administrative leave, tell me I need to do that and they'll be put on administrative leave immediately," he said. "And I was told I do not need to do that right now," end quote. County commissioners will consider on March 23rd appointing Kreiner for the remainder of Painter's term, he said. Pending approval by commissioners, Kreiner will be sworn in at 10 a.m. April 1st at the Midland County Courthouse. Lawsuit alleges inmate overdosed before being put in isolation. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The mother of an inmate who died by suicide at the Midland County Jail filed a federal lawsuit Thursday alleging officers knew her daughter had overdosed earlier in the day before placing her in an isolation cell where she hung herself. Angela Burroughs filed the lawsuit on behalf of herself and the other heirs of Stephanie Gonzalez, according to the suit filed in U.S. District Court. The suit names as defendants three jailers, one officer, Midland County, and the City of Midland. Gonzalez was arrested on June 17, 2018, on a public intoxication charge after someone reported seeing a woman walking in the street near West Haven Cemetery, the suit states. It alleges Gonzalez told the arresting Midland police officer, Blake Blancett, she had taken 10 Xanax pills, which are often taken for anxiety, and had been diagnosed with PTSD, bipolar disorder, and depression. A portion of a police report included in the lawsuit states that Gonzalez told Blancett she was not suicidal. The suit also alleges Blancett did not conduct a proper mental health screening on Gonzalez after bringing her into custody at the county detention center. A copy of a mental health screening form included in the lawsuit appears to show that Blancett checked no when asked if Gonzalez had a history of mental illness or was taking any medications. Despite indicating negatively to those questions, Blancett stated in a comments section that the inmate was, quote, diagnosed with PTSD, bipolar, and depression, end quote. Blancett also appears to have checked no when asked if Gonzalez had recently been hospitalized, although the suit alleges she was wearing a hospital bracelet at the time of her arrest. The suit goes on to outline the circumstances before Gonzalez's death. It states the jail supervisor, Monica Allen, was hesitant to accept Gonzalez after learning she had taken Xanax. According to the suit, which cites a statement made to the Texas Rangers, Allen allegedly told Blancett, quote, whoa, okay, well, hold on, I'm not taking her. Let me go get a nurse to evaluate her first, because, I mean, did you take her to the hospital? End quote. A nurse evaluated Gonzalez at the jail, and Gonzalez allegedly told her she had taken the Xanax throughout the day, not all at once. Gonzalez was then placed in an isolation cell, where she hung herself with jail-issued pants 2.5 hours after she was examined by the nurse. Allen was in a separate section of the jail at the time of Gonzalez's death, according to the suit. Quote, she said, in a statement to the Rangers, that supervisors were supposed to be in the back watching everyone, but due to being shorthanded, she was at booking one, the suit states. Gonzalez was left in her cell for more than an hour without a jailer checking on her, according to the suit. It states that surveillance footage shows it took 19 minutes for Gonzalez to complete suicide. A custodial death report filed with the Texas Attorney General's office states that the jail did not administer a suicide screening for Gonzalez or place her on suicide watch. It states that a booking officer determined that she was, quote, too intoxicated to answer suicide screening questions and did not fill out suicide screening form, end quote. The day before Gonzalez was arrested, she was brought to an emergency room because she was screaming and acting irrationally, the lawsuit states. She tested positive at the hospital for amphetamines. The suit states the Rangers investigated Gonzalez's death, but does not indicate the status of that investigation. It states the Texas Commission on Jail Standards found that the jail violated minimal standards in its handling of Gonzalez. Gonzalez's death is one of two at the Midland County Jail known to have been investigated by the Rangers in the last 2 years. It was reported last month there is an ongoing investigation into an inmate's death by hanging in May 2019. The suit states Burroughs is seeking damages for herself, Gonzalez's husband, and 5 children, as well as exemplary damages against the individuals named in the suit. Fasken Oil nonprofits mark the loss of Norbert Dickman. The story was written by Mila McEwen. Norbert Dickman, general manager of Fasken Oil and Ranch, passed away Wednesday morning from leukemia. He was 77. The Chicago native, who brought his family to Midland in 1988, was known for his civic involvement, supporting nonprofit organizations ranging from Casa de Amigos to the Boy Scouts of America to Prevent Blindness Texas to Trinity School. Quote, "The whole Permian Basin and the whole of Texas will mark his loss," David Chapman, Scout Executive and Chief Executive Officer of the Buffalo Trail Council, Boy Scouts of America, said in a phone interview. The organization had named Dickman as Distinguished Citizen of the Permian Basin in 2018. Quote, "He served on our executive board for a number of years and supported the Boy Scouts through his philanthropic endeavors for a number of years," he said. State Representative Tom Craddock said in an email statement, quote, "Norbert was a great friend and a man of faith. He was a man of his word and was tenacious and persistent. This is a major loss for the community for all of his involvement and community activities. He was instrumental in helping many organizations. Through his leadership and philanthropic endeavors, he not only helped Midland, but also other areas of the state," Craddock's statement said. Continuing the quote, "His business innovation and foresight were crucial to the growth of Midland. Norbert was the only person we have ever known who learned a foreign language, Italian, just to obtain a driver's license in the country. Nadine and I extend our deepest sympathy to Didria and all the Dickman family," end quote. Among his multitude of honors, Dickman was named a person of vision by the Permian Basin branch of Prevent Blindness Texas. Heather Patrick, president and CEO, told the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, "We were honored to present him the Person of Vision Award in 2005 for his ongoing community support and engagement. Prevent Blindness Texas defined those persons of vision as individuals whose perception in community service earned the respect of fellow Texans and those they served. We felt Mr. Dickman was deserving of this award. He clearly valued volunteerism and worked in his community to make a difference. We are saddened by his passing and know that Midland has lost a true community leader," end quote. Fasken Oil and Ranch, which Dickman headed since becoming the personal attorney of David and Barbara Fasken, sent this statement to the Reporter Telegram. Quote, "It is with a heavy heart that the Fasken family of companies announces the passing of Norbert Dickman. Norbert Joseph Dickman, a theologian and California attorney, came to manage the Fasken organization after having worked as its personal attorney of David and Barbara Fasken. Though based in the San Francisco area, Norbert often accompanied Mrs. Fasken to Texas in order to examine the vast Fasken properties. Over time, Norbert assisted Mrs. Fasken in assembling her various business interests into more efficient and integrated businesses, which were then placed into one family limited partnership. As general manager of the newly consolidated Fasken interests, Norbert substantially developed a ranching and farming operation into an oil, gas, ranching, and real estate corporation with interests in South Texas, along the Rio Grande, up the I-35 corridor to Austin in Midland, Texas, and the San Francisco Bay Area. Norbert mobilized great talent in order to build Fasken Oil & Ranch into a nationally recognized oil and gas company, all while maintaining a close-knit culture which he saw as vital to the success of the company. As general manager, he grew a company of 50 employees to over 250 and saw production rise from 5,000 to 26,000 BOPD and as many as 135 annually drilled wells during his tenure. He encouraged Fasken to improve our processes to be more efficient and better stewards of our resources. By diversifying and expanding into real estate, he fostered development for the benefit of the Texas cities of Laredo and Midland, and expanded the Fasken family's real estate holdings in Marin County, California, and in the Bay Area. Norbert's training in theology and philosophy ingrained his appreciation for the extraordinary dignity of each and every individual. He adopted and maintained a special respect for each person he met during his lifetime, which was likely the key to the profound impact he had upon all those whom he came across. His earnest attention and interest in what each individual had to offer not only influenced his familial, social, and business relationships, but also had a tremendous impact on his way of thinking about employees and his concern for them. Norma Lozano, who runs Fasken's cafeteria, speaks fondly of Norbert. In thinking of him, she said, quote, "He would make it a point to talk to each one of us. He always went out of his way to ask about me and my family. There will never be another person like him." End quote. Tommy Taylor, who serves as Fasken's Director of Oil and Gas Development, expressed his admiration for Norbert. Quote, "He was an unassuming leader. He never thought of himself but only of the family he represented and all of the employees. I always looked forward to meetings with Norbert because I left feeling enriched. He was so diverse and well-rounded." End quote. Norbert came from a very religious family and believed in living out his personal values and principles through his civic and charitable works, his philanthropy, and his involvement in the Catholic Church. He had a passion for learning and enjoyed spirited discussions on the philosophical, theological, and political. His pursuit of knowledge and desire to learn for the sake of learning were the catalyst to his speaking 8 languages and his fascination with the origin of words. The Fasken family and organization shall celebrate Norbert Dickman's life and honor his legacy by continuing the path forged under his leadership. There are at least 34 coronavirus cases in Texas. This was written by Megan Menchaca and Allison Ortegon of the Texas Tribune. Coronavirus in Texas is prompting major event cancellations, the extension of college spring breaks, and a handful of school closures as the number of cases surpasses 30. Also, health officials say they may have identified at least one case of the virus being spread through the community. Here's what you need to know. Question: how many people in Texas have coronavirus? There have been at least 34 confirmed cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the new coronavirus, in Texas. The largest numbers of cases have largely been centered in the Houston area, in North Texas, and at a federal quarantine site in San Antonio. Question: is coronavirus spreading person to person in Texas? Yes. A Frisco man who traveled to California passed the virus to his wife and 3-year-old child. His relatives' positive tests were publicly disclosed March 10th. and officials in Montgomery County said March 11th they had identified a patient with coronavirus who doesn't have any recent travel history, meaning community spread of the disease could be in Texas. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention defines community spread as the occurrence of cases for which the source of infection is unknown. Dallas County's second case was a person in their 50s who is a close contact of a 77-year-old out-of-state traveler. Both Dallas County cases were disclosed March 10th. County officials said they expected the second person's coronavirus test to come back positive, and there is not a cause for concern. The first instance of coronavirus spreading from person to person in the U.S. occurred in January when a 60-year-old woman from Illinois contracted the virus in China and transferred the virus to her spouse, according to the CDC. Question: what are colleges and universities doing? More than a dozen Texas universities have announced that they would extend students' spring breaks and would at least temporarily switch to online classes. Trinity University is transitioning to remote teaching for the remainder of the spring semester and permanently closing residence halls beginning March 16th. Texas Tech University has canceled classes the week after its spring break and said teaching will move online beginning March 30th. Rice University canceled in-person classes for the week of March 9th after an employee, one of several Houston area residents who had been on a contaminated cruise in Egypt, tested positive for the virus. Many colleges and universities have canceled events, prohibited large gatherings, stepped up their sanitation measures, and restricted university-sponsored travel. Question: are school districts closing? Yes, but only temporarily so far. As of March 11th, at least two Texas public school districts in areas near confirmed coronavirus cases have already temporarily canceled classes. Question: have there been major event cancellations in Texas? Yes. South by Southwest, an annual international festival that attracts hundreds of thousands of people to the state's capital, were canceled after Austin and Travis County officials issued local disaster declarations. That is one of the state's biggest cancellations of conferences, major events, or festivals in response to COVID-19. The 10-day event was scheduled to begin March 13th. Houston officials also decided March 11th to cancel the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo amid a 7-day emergency health declaration. On the same day, San Antonio officials said the Fiesta San Antonio Commission has no plans to cancel the week-long Fiesta celebration in April because the event date is too far away, but they will be taking extra precautions. And the University of Texas at Austin's home sporting events will be played without fans in attendance through March 22nd. Its athletic teams will continue to travel to road competitions as scheduled at this time, according to the department's website. The National Collegiate Athletic Association said men's and women's college basketball tournaments in March will not be open to the public. Question: what's the latest at Texas's federal quarantine site in San Antonio? The state's first 11 cases were people who caught the COVID-19 disease overseas and were quarantined at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. Since February, hundreds of American evacuees from China's Hubei province, the epicenter of the illness's outbreak, and two cruise ships have stayed on the base during their quarantine periods. The 11 people who tested positive while in quarantine were sent to San Antonio's Texas Center for Infectious Disease for isolated treatment. 10 of those people remained there as of March 10th. Almost 100 people from a cruise ship arrived at Lackland to be quarantined on March 10th after the initial hundreds of evacuees who tested negative had been allowed to leave. San Antonio City Manager Eric Walsh said there were 120 more people expected to come to Lackland from the same cruise ship on March 11th. But people who aren't from Texas are being rerouted to their home states, the San Antonio Express News reported, in what it called a last-minute change of plans that has flustered officials throughout the government. Question: how does coronavirus compare with the flu? Coronavirus comes with seasonal flu-like symptoms, including fever, cough, shortness of breath, and difficulty breathing. Severe cases of the virus can lead to pneumonia, severe acute respiratory syndrome, and kidney failure. It can also be deadly for a small percentage of the population, according to the World Health Organization. Similar to respiratory illnesses like the flu, coronavirus spreads from person-to-person contact, such as coughing, sneezing, or touching infected surfaces, according to the CDC. Both diseases are especially dangerous for people who are older than 65, but the flu is more dangerous for children and pregnant women, according to the New York Times. However, early reports indicate the coronavirus appears to be more contagious and have a higher fatality rate than the flu. Unlike the flu, there is no vaccine available to prevent or reduce cases of coronavirus. Question: how long does it take for symptoms to start showing? The time between catching COVID-19 and showing symptoms, the incubation period, ranges from 1 to 14 days, most commonly 5 days, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO plans to update that estimate as more information is gathered. Question: what is the fatality rate for coronavirus? Globally, about 3.4% of reported COVID-19 cases have died. By comparison, seasonal flu generally kills far fewer than 1% of those affected, the WHO Director General said on March 4th. The seasonal flu has a mortality rate of about 0.1%. According to a paper published by the Journal of the American Medical Association, the fatality rates for the elderly or people with other underlying health conditions can be much higher, as high as 14% for people over the age of 80. It is important to note that it is very early and data is still being gathered, so the fatality rate for COVID-19 could change, according to PBS NewsHour. Question: what is the course of the virus? How long does it last? It depends. Once someone is infected, they can face symptoms from days to weeks, depending on the severity of the illness. Some patients show only mild symptoms and may not initially require hospitalization, while other patients' symptoms worsen to lower respiratory tract infection in the second week of illness. For this reason, all patients should closely monitor their symptoms. There are some risk factors for progression to more severe illness, including older age and underlying conditions like lung disease, cancer, heart failure, cerebral vascular disease, renal disease, liver disease, diabetes, immunocompromising conditions, and pregnancy, according to the CDC. Quote, the severity seems to mostly be with older individuals and individuals with underlying debilitating conditions, said Peter Hotez, professor and dean at the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. Continuing the quote, "Also, healthcare workers seem to get sicker than other populations," end quote. Question, does the flu shot help lessen the severity of coronavirus if you get it? No. The flu shot builds up an immunity specifically to the flu, so it won't lessen the severity or protect from COVID-19. It could hypothetically help since if someone got sick with the flu and if their body was run down overall, then theoretically they might be more vulnerable to the effects of COVID-19 infection, said Monica Schock-Spana, Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security Senior Scholar. But doctors are still urging people to get the flu shot in the hopes of freeing up crucial hospital beds. Question, does Texas have tests for the coronavirus? What is testing like? How do I get tested? A doctor can determine whether the test is necessary using guidance from the CDC. The test includes a mouth and nose swab. That sample is then sent to the nearest public health lab for testing. Abbott announced March 5th there are 6 public health labs open in Texas for COVID-19 testing, with plans to have 4 additional labs open by the end of the month. The labs are in Austin, Houston, Dallas, El Paso, Lubbock, and Fort Worth, and the additional labs will be in Tyler, San Antonio, Corpus Christi, and Harlingen. Once all 10 are open, Abbott said the state lab network should be able to perform 125 tests a day. San Antonio Mayor Ron Nirenberg said March 9th that his city does not have enough tests available for residents. Question. I saw a headline about a possible vaccine for the coronavirus. Is that good news? While it is true researchers are testing possible solutions, they are almost certainly a long way off from a commercially available vaccine that could prevent the virus. Don't expect anything immediate. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, told CNN it would take around a year for a potential vaccine to be approved. He said the vaccine would need to go through a phase 1 clinical trial with a few dozen people for 3 months and then be tested in a second trial with hundreds of people for 6 to 8 months, according to CNN. Question, how long does the virus live on surfaces? Studies suggest it may last for a few hours or up to several days, depending on the type of surface and the temperature and humidity of the room, according to the World Health Organization. Experts advise cleaning frequently touched surfaces like doorknobs and elevator buttons with disinfectant and recommend that people wash their hands frequently with an alcohol-based hand sanitizer or soap and water and avoid touching their eyes, mouth, or nose. Question, what things can parents do to help protect their children besides making sure our kids wash their hands and are vaccinated? The CDC recommends children take the same preventative measures as adults, washing hands, avoiding contact with those who are sick, and staying up to date on vaccinations. They note there is no evidence children are more susceptible to the virus than adults, and in China, the majority of cases and the majority of severe symptoms occur in adults.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Friday, March 13th. No cases found locally so far. ECISD likely will make decision today. As of Thursday afternoon, no cases of the coronavirus were confirmed in Ector County, and the county's top health official urged those who are ill to contact their physician. Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia said if someone thinks they are sick, they need to contact their physician by phone for screening questions rather than going to the office first. The doctor's office will ask them screening questions, she said Thursday, as more disruptions were becoming known nationally. Tests are done through local doctor's offices and hospitals, and the health department helps send the samples for testing. We don't test here, Garcia said. We do help with the process of sending off the samples to get tested. If any tests come back positive, the Ector County Health Department will do an immediate press release to alert residents, as Garcia said they are required to release that information. We are taking all precautions and we are working close with CDC and DSHS, Garcia said. We are working really close with our local hospitals and first responders. We are doing everything we can in the event we do see cases in Ector County. Garcia stressed hand washing is best to help fight off coronavirus. If hand washing isn't available, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Garcia said when there is a confirmed case, the patient would be put in quarantine and will undergo further testing. That person would need back-to-back negative tests to come out of quarantine. Both Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center have implemented new visitor and access policies to prevent coronavirus infections. MCH visitors should enter the building only through the main entrance from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., admitting entrance 5 a.m. to 5 p.m., emergency department or center for women and infants, both 24 hours. ORMC has restricted children under the age of 12 who are not receiving treatment from visiting the hospital until further notice. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, said Thursday afternoon he had just gotten off an hour-long conference call with Governor Greg Abbott and other state leaders about preparations for and response to the coronavirus in Texas. As of this afternoon, there are 23 confirmed coronavirus cases in Texas, but there are no reported cases in the Permian Basin. While this is concerning, it's not a cause for panic, Landgraf said. The state of Texas is planning for the worst-case scenario, though we don't necessarily expect there to be a coronavirus outbreak in our state. The governor and I are both Eagle Scouts and believe it's always best to be prepared. In an effort to do that, we are eliminating red tape and otherwise doing everything possible at the state level to keep our supply chains open and preserve each community's vital functions. Decisions regarding school closures will be made at the local level by each individual school district, and the Texas Education Agency will provide as much information as possible to superintendents to help them make the best decision for their students, Landgraf wrote. He added, please continue to wash your hands and avoid unnecessary physical contact with others. State of Texas coronavirus information is updated at dshs.state.tx.us/coronavirus. Ector County ISD Public Information Officer Mike Adkins said conversations about the coronavirus have been ongoing all week. Adkins said he thinks there will be an announcement by today on what the district will do regarding coronavirus. Input from the city, county, and hospital is being considered in this ever-evolving situation. The district also is weighing whether to monitor people coming back from certain locations or canceling athletic events. Adkins said ECISD absolutely has to get the word out once it makes decisions. At UTPB, an action plan has been posted on the school's website. In a letter to students and faculty, University of Texas Permian Basin President Sandra Woodley said they are preparing for a health crisis by making contingency plans that can play a critical role to slow the spread of COVID-19 through strategies like ours, we can help to ensure that the critically ill can get care. The university must do its part in this community-wide effort. Woodley said the top priority is to keep students, faculty, and staff safe and to ensure that academic progress can continue uninterrupted. I am grateful to all of you in advance for your compassion for others and your patience as we navigate this complex situation. The good news is that we have no knowledge of any cases of COVID-19 associated with either our university or in our community at this time. We also know that this could change quickly, and we want to be ready. We are in daily consultation with public health officials at local, state, and national levels and following their science-based advice. As a result, we are taking the following actions. We will extend spring break by 1 week for students and will cancel all on-campus face-to-face classes the week of March 16th through the 20th. The faculty and staff will use this time to train and prepare contingency plans in the event it becomes necessary to move classes online at some point in the future. We will not cancel current online classes that are in progress. We will not cancel practicum or clinical experiences that are in progress. The university and all university campus services will remain open, including the dining hall, library, student activity center, student success center, and all administrative offices of the university. In a news conference Thursday afternoon, Woodley said the university is not closing, and international students and students who cannot go home can stay on campus. As of now, students should plan to return to campus for classes the week of March 23rd, and we will notify you if this changes. We may have to make a decision quickly about moving all instruction online, and this extra week will allow our faculty and staff to be prepared. In the event we move instruction online, students will need access to Wi-Fi and a computer. Tablets, phones, and Chromebooks will not work. If you will have technology challenges related to this move, please let us know here so we can help you prepare if we go online in the future. Students are encouraged, when feasible, to stay home with their families or at their permanent residences during this spring break extension and in the future if we move classes online. We realize that some UTPB students may need to continue to live in our residence halls and apartments, and we will prioritize the needs of these students. UTPB housing will remain open for those who need to stay on campus next week. Our STEM Academy will continue as usual without a spring break extension and will be coordinating future responses with ECISD and TEA. However, STEM Academy may consider applying for a waiver at some point to prepare for an online instruction contingency, but a date has not yet been determined, she said. In a press release from the Lone Star Conference on Thursday, the conference that UTPB is a member of stated it has suspended regular season competition until March 30th. The suspension went into effect at midnight Thursday. All practices and team activities will be an institutional decision made by each university. UTPB's athletic programs will continue for now, Woodley said, but competitions and university events may be modified and will be handled on a case-by-case basis. We will be reviewing protocols for all university events and will be making announcements soon, including events at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. We will likely cancel larger events soon, she said. We want to know if students have any additional challenges related to our plans. Please contact the Vice President for Student Affairs and Leadership, Dr. Becky Spurlock at spurlock_b@utpb.edu. Dr. Spurlock and her team will be ready to help students with issues that come up. Additional emergency funds may be available to help students during this time. All university, international, and domestic travel that has not yet commenced must receive express approval effective March 23rd through May 1st. We will reevaluate and issue further guidance after this date. You must receive approval from the President's office before traveling during this period. We will continue to provide updates and guidance as soon and as often as possible via email, social media, and on www.utpb.edu. On Thursday, Texas Tech announced classes were canceled after this week's spring break. Once they resume, they will be online. Many colleges and universities have done the same. Some public school systems have as well. Odessa College Director of Media Relations, Sherry Dalton, said Thursday, closing has been under discussion, but no decision has been made. UTPB, Odessa College, ECISD, and the County Health Department met Thursday. Other than UTPB, no one has announced official decisions. Though there haven't been any confirmed cases of the coronavirus in Ector County, a press release stated the City of Odessa and Downtown Odessa, Inc. have decided to cancel Tap Into Downtown Odessa, scheduled for March 21st. The press release detailed the cancellation as a precautionary measure. Refund process has already started for individuals who pre-purchased tickets for the event. Local stores were experiencing a rise in demand for certain groceries due to coronavirus reports. While some residents are waiting for the coronavirus to pass, others are stockpiling and preparing for the worst. Susan Impero spent part of her Thursday shopping at HEB and said that the coronavirus reported in the media has been blown out of proportion and that it's just important for people to have good hygiene. She said the way she shops hasn't changed because of the virus. You have to take precautions. When you're in public, of course, you're susceptible to anything, she said. I'm not worried about it at all. Impero said that some of her family members have told her to stock up on water and buy masks, but she believes that the situation has been magnified by the media. A lot of local stores have run out of items like hand sanitizer and have put restrictions on how much toilet paper and water can be bought due to residents stockpiling items. Corina Mendoza was at HEB looking for hand sanitizer and said that she is preparing for the worst. Mendoza is a prepper and said that the coronavirus has escalated her situation. She has enough toilet paper to last a year, she said, as well as canned foods, meats to freeze, and water. If things get worse and we run out of food, we have that at least, she said. She said that it's going to be a big threat, and the news has continued to sugarcoat the situation. You don't know if they're going to shut us down like they did China, she said. It's scary. Mendoza said she could get the virus fairly easily because she has lupus. I'm just staying close to home, she added. I'm fixing myself to be hunky-dory in my home and not leaving. She said that she felt people shouldn't go to highly populated places like amusement parks or movie theaters. Amid all the fears, quarantines, and stockpiling of food, it has been easy to ignore the fact that more than 60,000 people have recovered from the coronavirus spreading around the globe. The disease can cause varying degrees of illness and is especially troublesome for older adults and people with existing health problems who are at risk of severe effects, including pneumonia. But for most of those affected, coronavirus creates only mild or moderate symptoms such as fever and cough, with the vast majority recovering from the virus. According to the World Health Organization, people with mild illness recover in about 2 weeks, while those with more severe ailments may take 3 to 6 weeks to rebound. In mainland China, where the virus first exploded, more than 80,000 people have been diagnosed, but more than 58,000 already have recovered. Because the difference in impact can be so great, global health authorities have the difficult task of alerting the public to the virus dangers without creating panic. Already, the widespread consequences of the virus have been staggering, sending shockwaves through the world's financial markets. Global oil prices sustained their worst percentage losses since the Gulf War in 1991, and new restrictions were imposed in Italy and in Israel as the Holy Week approached. Quick hits. Fun day. The CAF High Sky Wing, CAF Desert Squadron, and West Texas Aviators has scheduled Aviation Fun Day, Ghosts of West Texas, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at CAF High Sky Wing Hangar, 9600 Wright Drive. There will be open cockpit tours, museum tours, aircraft rides, and a fly-in day. Lunch will be available for purchase. Admission is free. The Comanche Trails Woodturners has scheduled a meeting from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at George Hancock's shop, 1709 Clark Street, Midland. Randy Thorne from Lubbock will turn off set goblets on the wood lathe. The event is open to the public. For more information, call 432-439-5343. All Things Beautiful Spring Expo will take place from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. The Junior League of Midland, Inc. has scheduled the annual Shotguns and Stilettos Luncheon from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday at the Midland Country Club, 1601 Texas 349, Midland. Guest speaker will be fashion brand founder and philanthropist Rebecca Minkoff. All proceeds benefit the Junior League of Midland, Inc. Go online for tickets or tables. jlmidland.org. The Boys and Girls Club has scheduled Breakfast with Champions benefit from 7:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. May 7th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Sponsorships are available. To sponsor or for more information, call Stephanie Plinus at 432-337-8389. Volunteers needed. CPS and CASA are teaming up to help a single mother in need. She needs to update her home in order to bring her three children back into placement. The cleanup project starts at 8 a.m. March 14th until completed. Duties include removing trash from the home, some flooring, painting, putting in windows, and window units. Free breakfast and lunch will be provided. For the address or for more information, call 432-248-4900 or 258-7321. HPV cancers are on the rise. Cheer Good Health for Friday. Dear Dr. Roach, 4 years ago, I was treated for squamous cell carcinoma of the tongue. 1 year later, my tongue was removed. The chief surgeon told me the cancer had HPV markers, which I guess spread cancer throughout the tongue. Is this a common occurrence with SCC of the tongue? Also, how does one catch the HPV virus? Finally, is there a vaccine to prevent being infected by the HPV virus? Dr. Roach writes, human papillomavirus is an increasing cause of head and neck cancer, including cancer of the tongue. It is more common in men. Smoking used to be the predominant cause of these types of cancers, but despite smoking rates going down, the rates of head and neck cancers has risen, mostly due to HPV-related cancers. Some estimates are that 80% of head and neck cancer now is HPV-related. The base of the tongue and the tonsillar region are the most common sites for the cancer to begin. HPV is acquired through sexual activity. It usually takes 10 years or more after the virus is acquired for cancer to grow. Once cancer starts, it tends to grow locally and may spread to lymph nodes, and then may even spread to distant sites such as the lung. HPV-associated cancer is not more aggressive or dangerous than smoking-related cancer. In fact, new evidence suggests better outcomes for HPV-associated cancers. Surgery remains the primary therapy, but radiation and chemotherapy may be used, depending on the stage of the disease. There is absolutely a vaccine to prevent HPV infection for both men and women. It is most effective if given before exposure to HPV, which is why it is recommended before the onset of sexual activity.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.